Mini episode 651 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to mini episode 651 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris, here to introduce our compilation of our finest guest moments from mini episodes 550 to 650. We've been privileged to have some outstanding people on the program throughout our history, which totals 9 years in just over a month, and this stretch of programming was stellar indeed, with the likes of Bob Barker, John Bastow, Chip Carey, Ernie Johnson, Robert Flores, Nikita Koloff, and Lex Luger representing. Sit back and enjoy hearing this diverse group talking about anything and everything on the show where nothing is off topic.
I'm struck by what you said about Gorgeous George coming through Springfield. So in other words, you got to see a lot of the greats coming through Springfield before they were anybody. Gorgeous George, Stan Musial. Is there anybody else that came through there before they were famous?
Well, do you remember Frank Sinatra?
Yes.
I saw Frank Sinatra at the Shrine Mosque there in Springfield, Missouri, when he was singing with the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra. And Tommy Dorsey introduced him as a young man who had just joined the band, and this is the first time that he had ever sung with a band, and he sang Indian Summer. And I was there with my young lady friend, who was became my wife, Dorothy Jo, and I'm tone deaf, but we listened to Sinatra, and I said, honey, I said, how is he? I said, is he pretty good? And she said, yeah, he is pretty good. And he was pretty good. But years later, I was narrating the Rose Parade for about 20-some years there on CBS, and he was the Grand Marshal. And I always taped an interview with the Grand Marshal before the parade that we would play while the Marshal rode by. And I was talking with Frank after we did the interview. And I said, you know, I was in Springfield, Missouri, when you came through there with Tommy Dorsey. And I said, was that really the first time that you had ever sung with a band? He said, could have been. It could have been. And a good friend of mine from Springfield became a top disc jockey in New York. And he had Frank on his show one time. And Jim and Lowe, that was his name, Jim Lowe, and I were very good friends, and we had double dated that night. And Jim said, you know, I was in Springfield when you came through, and the same thing. And Sinatra said, it could have been. It could have been. And you know, if it was Joplin, Missouri, wherever the band went next, and he said that same thing, I bet he said it could have been to everybody because he didn't want to disillusion them, you know. I thought it was kind of him.
The red carpet, and of course, outside of Heidi Klum doing the Big Bird thing there with her outfit, there wasn't a whole lot going on, it seemed like. You know, I was reading some stuff that indicated, well, with the heat, whatever, and I'm thinking, is that really going to stop anybody on such a big night? I was going to go out there and try to steal the show, but it's too hot and I don't want to sweat. So what do you attribute that to? Is it just sort of this moment in fashion where there wasn't as much popping? Or, you know, why do you think the red carpet wasn't as much of a blowaway as it is some years?
I definitely will agree with you that as far as red carpets go, this one was definitely flatter than others. You're always going to have the Emmys be a little bit flatter than the MTV Awards. You're never going to have the World Tour talk about red carpet like you are going to have after the MTV VMAs, the Movie Awards, and even the Grammys to some extent, because there's just so much more flair and there's so much more personality. But you do have a little bit more risks being taken in the Emmys than I think were done this year. I don't know if it's the heat or anything. I think there were no super standouts in the sense that I don't think anybody was so amazing and jaw-dropping that you're out of the ordinary of what they normally are. I mean, obviously, you know, I mean, Sofia Vergara always looks stunning in what she wears, but you begin to expect it. So the bar is high to begin with. But I don't think anybody, you know, far exceeded the bar so much that people were talking about it at the water cooler afterwards today. And nobody went so much out on a risk that it was, you know, to the point that it was going to be talked about either. So in that case, it was sort of midwin. You know, there weren't any, like, huge, you know, failures, and there weren't any enormous successes that you just, you know, couldn't stop talking about. It was more so the awards. I think the set, personally, was one of the best it's ever been. I like that futuristic set. I thought it was really cool, and, you know, it looked very, very expensive. I mean, more so than I think some other Emmy sets have done in the past.
They have a tremendous payroll. Some of it is being used inefficiently as far as paying players who are not there, like Matt Kemp. It's a temporary situation for a year or so where they're having to do this kind of stuff. But if you look back, of course, at the teams that made the NLCS in 08 and 09, that was powered by a great run at AA Jacksonville, I think about circa 2005 or so, that great crop of players that was coming through there at that point in time. So is there real reason for the rest of baseball to shudder as I sort of draw the parallel of Theo Epstein in Boston here with Friedman in L.A.? Because one would think, at least on the surface, imagine what the Dodgers can do when their payroll is not so inefficient as it is now. It seemed like that would be a very, very scary thought for the rest of baseball.
Yeah, but, you know, it's funny. People talk about that with the Yankees in the 90s when they and the Braves were locked up in all the playoff races. It's, well, the Yankees, all they do is go out and buy their players. Well, if you think about the core of the Yankees, Jorge Posada, homegrown Yankee, Tino Martinez, he was acquired, Bernie Williams, homegrown Yankee, Mariano Rivera, homegrown Yankee, Andy Pettit, homegrown Yankee. So the core of the Yankees team was farm system guys, and those players were supplemented either via free agency or trade. Let's look at the Dodgers. Very similar. Jock Peterson, homegrown Dodger. Yasiel Puig, homegrown Dodger. Clayton Kershaw, homegrown Dodger. Kenley Jansen, homegrown Dodger. Seager, the kid in the minor leagues, the big hard-throwing pitcher that just came up and pitched for him, homegrown Dodger. So, you know, as long as your core is your homegrown talent and picking where the Dodgers are picking every year, kind of like the Braves, is a testament to their scouting and development people, it's not easy to do that. They've drafted and developed very, very well, and the players that they don't think can fit in with them, they've used to trade away to get what they wanted, a.k.a. Hector Oliveira, who was traded to the Braves for Alex Wood and Jim Johnson and Luis Avila. That's what farm systems do, but you have to have talent. The homegrown talent is what drives all of it, irrespective of how much money your franchise has or can spend. And for years, the Dodgers have been one of the best in baseball and probably still are at drafting and developing and signing players in the U.S. and internationally and getting them to the major leagues. And that's a huge, huge benefit, a huge tip of the cap. And you're right, when they weed out some of these bigger term contracts that they took on when they went for it, the Dodgers truly will be a monster out in the National League West.
How much stuff comes easily in terms of building the chemistry that you guys have had for the show on TNT and also on NBA TV? How much of it has kind of come natural? How much of it comes from outside the studio kind of bonding? I think that's something people would be curious about, because that's one of the first things that comes to everybody's mind when they're talking about that show, just how great the flow is.
Well, you know, the thing that I've always said, you can never predict chemistry. It's just impossible. And TV executives have been spending lifetimes trying to do that, trying to say, if I match up this guy with this guy and these two, you know, will that work? And it doesn't always work. And for us, it was one of those things. The first night we were ever on the air with me, Kenny, and Charles, I remember Charles coming out, and we were ready to do a halftime, and he asked Kenny, he said, what are you going to say about that when we go there? And Kenny said, you'll find out. And that has been the way we've done the show ever since. I mean, it's always been a spontaneous, unrehearsed, nobody knows the questions going in. And that's what makes it work, because you get genuine reactions, and you get you know, they're just your gut reactions to what's going on. And the fact that we don't sit there and rehearse a segment before we do it, so people know what's going to happen, that just adds to it. And I think that's what resonates with the people at home, is that this is just like four guys sitting around in a living room talking hoop. Nobody's asking for permission to talk. Everybody's got an opinion. Sometimes whoever speaks loudest gets heard, and that's what's made it fun for all these years. So there was no way to predict it, but you know, just through the years as we've gone on, it just we have this incredible comfort level with one another. And what makes it work too is that nobody's begging for airtime. Nobody's begging for FaceTime. Nobody wants to make the show about them. They just want to make the show better, and that's what's been really the key to the success of the show.
With your great interest in the world of pro graphs, this evolving relationship now with WWE, which I am given to understand is going to involve a lot of coverage of WrestleMania 32 next year, which should be the biggest one of them all, at least in terms of raw attendance, maybe in terms of money, et cetera. Again, as you look at it from this point out, it would seem like a natural for them to have you on this to a pretty good degree. Do you have a sense at this early point in time how much you might be involved with that?
I have no idea. I'm usually the last person to find out. You know, it might be public before I find out. But you know, I do think that it's a good it's a chance for. Because both brands are well known, they have a lot of equity, and you know both brands they're fighting for similar audiences. You know, WWE may skew a little younger, but you know when you get 93,000 people, which you know, or 93,000 plus, which is what they're hoping to get in Arlington and at WrestleMania. You know, and look, the event is scripted and predetermined, but these guys are still athletes, and there is some storytelling involved. So I think it's a natural. I think it's you know, are we going to be showing Raw and SmackDown and Impact highlights on a weekly or nightly basis? No. But whenever there's a big event and you get some crossover stars in there at the event, like WrestleMania will usually bring out, like I had Ronda Rousey last year, in Santa Clara. So yeah, I think it makes perfect sense. So, you know, hopefully that'll continue and we'll see what happens down the road.
But as of now, no chance of seeing a really sweet Red Arrow in the top 10 on a given night.
I hope so. I would love for that. Now that would be definitely, fun to have there in the top 10. But, you know, like I said, whenever there's big time events and you can kind of be a part of it and just showcase your brand to, you know, a whole bunch of people gathering in one place, I think it helps. And it also helps WWE as well.
Nikita, thoughts of this man who was a friend of yours, who was a mentor, somebody who was the boss, the booker, that whole time there in Crockett, and the booker when you came back in 91, what he meant to you, what he meant to the business, and anything else you want to get across?
The boss, the booker, he really, for me, was more of a friend than he was a boss or booker. And I think that's why, I treated him as such. And what I mean by that is I had a level of respect for him as a boss and booker, but because of our friendship, you know, I didn't overextend that perception of a boss and booker. We became very good friends and lifelong friends, and I think because of that, I gained a lot of respect from him in return, and a lot of credit to my career, one of several who I credit to the success of the Russian Nightmare. The idea of the superpowers at the time, I didn't know. Looking back, 2020, right? Vision's 2020 when you look back. I had no idea. We really had no idea. Even though him and Jim Crockett had an idea, I don't think they really knew how big that was going to get, the teaming of the Russian Nightmare and the American Dream. And so we stepped out there. We took a risk and stepped out and went for it. And of course, the you know, history speaks for itself. What happened with the formulation of the superpowers, and so very, very incredibly fond memories traveling up and down the highways. And by him and I, riding in that convertible red Mercedes-Benz that he would drive. That was kind of an inside joke on my part. You know, all the other guys would drive the Booker. I made the Booker drive me and to the towns, you know. And he didn't mind. But we had that kind of mutual respect for one another. And so, one of the fond memories, him and I riding the towns together, flying on planes, dreaming big dreams. I just look back from the matches, from the war games to the horsemen to just so many wonderful memories. In respect to the last several months of his life. Obviously, there were some. One thing I learned about him was, you know, he was, in a sense, a very private person, so I can understand that he didn't divulge a lot of information in the latter days and weeks and months of his life. He was just that way. And so, as you said, he would just ride it out. That seems to be what he did. And probably other than close family, not too many people really knew the severity of what he was suffering with. So nothing but really, for me personally, nothing but really great things to say about Dusty.
Well, it's something that just seemed like insult to injury for another one of the old Crockett guys. There's somebody else that we think of in the public mind sort of the same way with Dusty as we think of you. Of course, Magnum T.A., the guy who's, when you formed the Superpowers, of course, that took the place of America's team with him and Magnum back in the day. Unfortunately, he passed away on Magnum's birthday. And that I read that. I'm like, oh, God, that probably had to make it even worse for him in a way. That's something terrible when your birthday is marred by that. And probably always remember that. I'd like to turn to you, Lex, for your thoughts. I know that in addition to Dusty being the boss down there, the guy who was in charge during the formative part of your career, first with the Four Horsemen, and then somebody that really sort of formed a pivot point for you, it seems like. Starrcade 87, that was the beginning of you doing the big turn and becoming the big franchise babyface that everybody was waiting for. So that feud with Dusty really was sort of your coda in your first role there and getting you ready for everything that was to come. So I'd like to get your thoughts on working with Dusty, being friends with him, et cetera.
In the ring, just a charismatic, iconic figure. Incredible, the people that have come to me the last few number of days since his passing and told me the fond memories they've had of him and how much they enjoyed watching him. His personality, one of the best interviewers ever in our business, without a doubt. The plumber's son, the whole, just amazing. His crossed all racial lines. Just an amazing performer in the ring. Utmost respect for that. He also was very instrumental in the foundational days, weeks and years of my career. He was instrumental in bringing me in, pairing me with the Four Horsemen, saw a vision for my career. Came up with my finish, the backbreaker, which became known as the torture rack. My nickname, the total package, was mainly something he came up with right before I went out for my first interview on TBS back in the old days. My first came in there. So he had a profound positive effect on launching. And as far as outside of all that, a real visionary kind of guy, had a real psyche into the mind of the wrestling fan. One of the reasons he was always what you call a boss or what we call a booker. And Camp just had some incredible ideas he'd come up with, not only like for wrestling, but for things outside of the wrestling world and his love for the outdoors and the mountains and his big, what was that full-length coat he had? Was it a mink coat he had or what was that, Nikita, he wore? It was.
It was a full-length mink coat.
Yeah, I mean, just. That's the flamboyance. He's a guy that could pull that off. And it just his personality is bigger than life. He can wear stuff like that, fashion-wise. And just a lot of, as I'm speaking, just a lot of incredible memories of Dusty from all those aspects. Great guy.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.